Welcome to Springboard, sparking real conversations where you learn answers to the questions you didn't know you had about relationships or the things you may have wondered about but were too afraid to ask. We take a dive deep into uncharted waters, provide insight, and promote defining your own relationship while you get to participate in the capacity you choose. Whether that's just listening, taking notes, or contemplating a change in your life, we're here to offer a safe space to explore murky topics and jump into the conversations we all sometimes avoid so we can grow together to make change. We'd like to thank our generous sponsor, Capcom, for funding this podcast. Their commitment to nurture the community and improve lives of families resonates strongly with our mission, and we are incredibly proud to have such an amazing community support. Oh, the taboo topic that everyone avoids, the birds and the bees conversations parents cringe through, and the chats that bring on some serious blushing. But why are we so uncomfortable talking about sex? In this episode, we're going to dive into the importance of chugging through the discomfort and some ways you can approach the subject with the people in your life who need to hear it most.
So my name is Rebecca Jones, and I'm the Client Services Director here at Wellspring.
Hi, my name is Kathy Denellen, and I am the Non-Residential Services Manager here at Wellspring. And I guess welcome to the very first Wellspring podcast. Rebecca and I are kind of getting this off the ground, and we hope that, you know, it's going to be great.
Great.
So as a way of kind of getting started, Rebecca and I have worked together for many years.
Very many.
Many, many years. But just to kind of something maybe I don't know, or I have a hunch, but I don't think I actually know the real answer.
Ooh, I want to know what your hunch is.
Nope, I'm just going to get your question. So Rebecca, I'm going to ask you a question to get us warmed up here.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. What is the most useless slash random talent that you have?
Well, I have so many, but the answer that I did give when we answered these questions is that I make an especially amazing monkey impression.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes. And if I did it now, the decibels would go off of the... We're across from the fire department, so we don't want to do it now. They'll think a siren started. But yes, I make an amazing monkey,
you know,
noise.
I don't think I've heard that. After this podcast, we definitely have to have a
absolutely
demonstration
for sure.
Yeah, and then maybe we can fix the decibel on this sometime, and you can do it online.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So Kathy, your question is, what was your favorite childhood toy?
So from a very young age until when I was way too old, I was obsessed with dolls.
Like when you say way too old, like, do you still play with them?
I had to do them in secret. Like, I had to, like, when friends came over, I had to hide them because it would be embarrassing to have dolls around when you're, like, 13. So it was really embarrassing. And then I'd actually have guilt playing with them because I did. I loved all kinds of dolls. I could never get enough dolls.
Like, any particular doll? Just any?
I mean, I went through the Barbie phase.
Yeah.
But baby dolls, yeah, definitely just collected them, loved them.
I'm picturing your house like one of those creepy places where you turn off the lights and all the eyes open.
I don't have them now, which is good. I got off it.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, so I think we're here today to talk about consent and kind of our experiences with what kind of sex education we had as kids. Some of the work that, you know, that we do, things that we're seeing because maybe people haven't had these conversations. So do we want to start with kind of what our own experiences were as children?
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, for me, this is going to be a short answer because it was pretty much not much at all. Right? I mean, back, you know, I'm
you don't have to disclose your age.
And I think it was pretty typical that, you know, no one in my generation got much sex education, and we weren't getting it home, and we didn't get it at school. And of course, that's not making an overgeneralization, but I think that, you know, kind of as a rule, that's the way it went among my friends and peers.
Yeah, I don't think, like, I can't, my parents never sat me down and, like, explained anything to me. I can remember, like, health class where you got the, you know, the pictures where you like giggled and talked, or like the bus learning, you know, like the learning on the bus of like from other kids that really had no idea what they were talking about.
That was the problem. I didn't take a bus.
Oh.
So I walked to school by myself. So it's very bad.
Yeah. And I just remember it being a lot of like biology, like, you know, what works and how it works and what it does. And it, a lot of like, this is, you know, the sperm go here and this is an egg and, you know, all of that stuff, but which is, you know, important information, but it didn't really talk about any aspects of consent or like sexual relationships. It was more just like the biology of sex and how to not get pregnant or not get an STD.
Right.
Or to just not have sex at all.
Right. 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of the, I think we can see in some of the work that we do why that isn't an effective means of talking about sex education.
It's so true. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, I think in the work that we do and the people that we talk to, they have very similar experiences that we did.
Right.
And so, you know, when, you know, they're confronted with any kind of like, you know, a sexual activity that they don't consent to or they didn't understand sometimes, it's just puts them at such a disadvantage. And I think for me, listening to people, it can be just really sad.
Right.
Right.
I mean, right. And I think, you know, we're bombarded with messages of how bad sex can be. Like, you can get this from it and you can get that from it and you can have all these consequences. And we don't actually talk about, like, the enjoyable aspects of, you know, a sexual relationship with someone, which actually, you know, when we think about, we're in this period now where we're, you know, college students are in what they call the red zone,
right.
Mm-hmm. Where sexual assaults are more possible, you know, that we don't talk about the pleasurable aspects. So we don't talk about people that want to have a sexual relationship with someone, what that looks like, how to navigate that, how to have a healthy sex life, how to enjoy it, how to say no to some things but not other things. We haven't taught our kids how to kind of navigate sex.
I know, and you're absolutely right. And I think like one of the things that I've learned through just reading about this and through the work here is, and I'm a parent of, you know, 20s and their kids in their 20s. And, you know, we spend so much time teaching them about like how to drive a car and mm-hmm. being safe with your friends and getting into college and getting tutors and all this stuff so that they can be successful in life. And yet we leave that out. And it's like you're saying, it's such an important way to have a healthy life. Sex is part of our life. And, you know, I'm now just so kind of confronted with the fact that it's a huge piece of their learning that I think a lot of us, including myself, just have left out.
Right. And I think, you know, some people might wonder, like, how is this important? But the reality is we do see the ramifications of people that have experienced sexual assault. And if you are, you know, a young person, maybe starting out in college, and you've been sexually assaulted, it can actually have a long-lasting impact on your education, on your life. And so what can we do as parents to educate our kids and have them better prepared? And I am a parent of little ones from 6 to preteens. Mm-hmm. And I will say that I've done this work for a number of years, we've discussed, but it's not comfortable.
Right.
You know, even doing this work, it's uncomfortable to talk to your own kids about it. Because then they think, well, do you do that? And that's disgusting. And I don't want to talk about that. So it can be a really tricky thing to figure out, how do I talk to kids about this? And I think some of the programming that we do here, obviously, we talk about consent without it being related to sex.
Right.
You know, like I think about tickling was probably the most impactful thing that I learned while working here, that, you know, just tickling a child and not stopping when they say stop. What are we teaching our kids? Like, that their voice doesn't mean anything.
I think that's so true. And just to just one more thing, like your example is another thing that I learned too, is that, you know, hugging people in your family, like go hug Uncle Joe.
Right.
You know, like forcing our kids to hug and to accept kisses from relatives or family friends, that they may not, giving them agency in that. And that's something that I had to learn, you know, later.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So kind of piggybacking on what you were saying about, you know, hugging, I think about, you know, as my kids are younger and I'm thinking about not everybody in my family is as on board with that, right? So Some people think that, you know, well, no, Uncle John came all the way. You have to hug him. Right. Like, Uncle John's feelings are going to be hurt. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have to take a really hard stance with your family. And as you mentioned, you kind of started to learn that. Was that something that you experienced, having to take a stance with your family at all?
Yeah, you know, I think that, like I said, I came late to it. I think I didn't really understand that, to be mm-hmm. quite honest, as a parent of young children, you know, who are now all grown up, you know. But I look back and I think, like, it's just so, you know, obvious. But, you know, these are the things that you just don't know when you don't know them.
Right. And we're sending messages to kids that, you know, how they feel about people being in their space or touching their body doesn't matter because this person is somebody important, so you should do this, or this person cares about you, so you should do this. And so if you fast forward into, say, college, and you're in a relationship, well, this person cares about me, so I should do this. This person, you know, did this for me, so I should do this. And it's kind of these lessons that we're teaching kids all along the way that we don't even realize we're doing.
I know. And I just think back too, like, with my kids growing up, they definitely had in school good touch, bad touch, and stranger danger or whatever. And, you know, although I think some of it was maybe a little bit watered down or something, I think that as parents, we could have, you know, I could have, or other parents our age could have, like, really piggybacked on there and not just said, right, like, that's the job of the school, I'm off the hook on this. And you know, and I think too, I think it's our own level of comfort, right? You know, my kids know that I was really comfortable talking to them about, like, peer relationships, because that's kind of like, as a social worker, it's
right,
like, kind of like, you know, and I could be really good in that role. But they knew that if I did sit down and probably have a sexual conversation with them, I was going to be uncomfortable. And so if they're uncomfortable, I think it was more that they knew that I would be uncomfortable.
Right, right.
And they, so there's that whole piece that I think we have to work on as a society, maybe, or even just
right
in general. Yeah,
absolutely. And if we start these messages in young ages, yeah, that we don't, the sexual conversation as they're, you know, in their teenage years or later is going to be a different conversation, because we've already taught them how to respect their bodies. We've already taught them that their word means something. In some ways, we've already taught them refusal skills.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the stranger danger. And, you know, what we know now is that Uncle Joe is probably more likely to be the one that offends.
Absolutely.
Than the stranger in the alley. So, you know, I think we got a lot of that information wrong. And, you know, I think the comfort, it comes with just faking it, maybe. Yeah. Sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And having a peer group too, like, none of my mommy friends were talking about this.
Right.
Like, you know, so it's a big change, you know. And it's interesting too, because when I started working here, you know, consent was something I learned a lot about. And I started to talk to my then teenage kids about that. And I was reading this book called Sexual Citizens, mm-hmm. that we here all think is, you know, something that's a great book. But, you know, one of the things they said is, like, when kids get to college and they do that consent, whatever it is, 101 before
right.
they start school, along with the drinking 101 or whatever, it's like, it was quoted as saying, like, it's teaching consent at that age without any sex education is comparable to teaching calculus when they have had no arithmetic.
Mm.
And, like, that really hit home for me. I think it brought a tear to my eye, to be honest.
Yeah.
One, because I'm bad at math, but also... but really also because it's just such an illustration of, like, here we are talking about consent when kids don't have any idea. A lot of them, some of them, I should say, many kids don't have any idea about their own sexuality.
Right.
And about what they want from sex.
What they want.
Yeah.
Right. Right. What is their goal of it? You know, we know how to not have a baby and we know how to not get an STD, but then why do people have sex? And we've kind of, like, punished something that's supposed to be, like, you can enjoy this, but how do you enjoy it and know what you enjoy? How do you experiment with things and know when to stop and when not to stop? And that's on both sides, mm-hmm. saying what you like and don't like, and then respecting someone's decision to stop because, no, I don't like that, or that doesn't feel good, or that's not how I thought it would feel, and being able to listen to that. And I think that's a great comparison, because I think you're not alone in your distaste for math. But also because, it, you know, we are sending kids to college away from their families, away from their peers, away from their supports. And they're navigating these times, a lot of times, with the addition of alcohol. and having to navigate these situations with no preparation at all.
True.
And then I think the other aspect, you know, that we've talked about here has been that, you know, a lot of times I think we think about maybe a perpetrator of sexual assault is this like really horrible person in the alleyway kind of thing. And the reality is that these people are our sons.
Yeah.
They're our friends. They're our neighbors. And not all of them realize that they've perpetrated a sexual assault.
That's right.
Because as much as we haven't maybe taught about refusal skills and feeling confident with saying yes or no, we also haven't taught those skills about how to listen to people and how to read people.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's so true. And like you think about that, you know, you set these kids out to college or whatever into their adult lives without this vital information.
Right.
And, you know, we just expect it to all go swimmingly. And what we know from our work here is that it often, very often doesn't. And then, like you said earlier, we're picking up pieces. People are damaged. They've, you know, went through this. And you know, a lot of it we know now, not all of it, but a lot of it can be prevented.
Right.
Because prevention is key.
Right.
And we can all be part of that.
Right. Absolutely.
So, yeah. So, like, you know, for you, Rebecca, who is parenting young children, you would say that, like, you're saying, like, the consent is around a lot about, like, everyday things that you're consenting to. Right.
Right.
Like, that's how, that's a good way.
Right.
I think that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, the, you know, if Uncle Johnny gets his feelings hurt because he doesn't get a hump, well, Uncle Johnny is an adult and he can sort that out. But we don't do things with our body to make other people happy. We do things with our body when we want to do things with our body. And I think it seems like a strange lesson because it is so foreign to people, which is crazy, but it's such an important lesson for them to know and listen and realize and to say, stop tickling me. And I stop tickling them. And then they can say, tickle me again. And then I'll start. And they're in control of what's happening to their body. And so, yeah, those are the messages that we've tried to send.
That's great. Yeah. And I mean, and you brought up too the role of alcohol. I mean, you know, one of the things that I think I was reading too is that like sometimes people, students, they use alcohol as liquid courage, right? If they
sure.
if they don't know about sex and they don't know what they want, as you said, or
right.
they don't, you know, they haven't learned about it. It's maybe it's easier to have a couple of drinks.
Sure.
And get some liquid courage. And that can be, you know, in a situation that becomes really fraught, right? When you can't give consent or you can't ask for his consent, that's
right.
when you see a lot of real sad things happen.
I mean, I remember being my 20s. It was just a little bit ago, but, and the same thing. You're nervous. You don't really know how to navigate things. Get a little liquid courage in you. You feel like you're in control, but situations happen and you realize you're not. So you're navigating, you know, how to have sexual relationships. At the same time, you're probably navigating your first experiences with alcohol. Maybe your first experience is being away from home. And it's kind of like we are setting kids up for failure in a lot of ways.
I agree. I know. And that's why I think, like, you know, these conversations are so important and just so necessary to, like, as part of parenting. This, just like I said, you know, you teach them to drive a car, you teach them how to get along with others, you teach them all these great things, you know, like, and it's just to, you know, reading this somewhere too, you know, it's like you wouldn't say in order to drive this car now maybe you should have a couple of drinks because, you know, it'll make you
because you'll feel more comfortable
yeah,
driving.
You know, I mean, you know, that, that's ridiculous. So, but, you know, that's kind of like what I, when I think in the extreme or the little bit silly, but it's true
right.
in some ways, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And so teaching kids all about consent, refusal skills,
yeah.
you know, how to know what you want, how to know what you don't want, how to say no, how to listen to other people, how to read body language, because it's not just maybe what someone's saying, but it may be, you know, they turn stiffer or they turn away, or how do you read that body language? And all that can be done at a younger age too. You know, if somebody stops laughing when you're tickling them, pay attention to that. What does that mean? Should I stop? Should I pull away? Or should I say, hey, you stopped laughing. Do you want me to stop tickling you? Because in some ways, you know, like I said earlier, I've done this for many, many years and still feel uncomfortable talking to my kids about sex.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that will change necessarily. But it's easier to talk about those things when it's about tickling or hugging. And so I'm teaching the same principles,
yeah.
but I'm not having the conversation about sex.
Exactly. And even though, like I said, you know, with my own kids, I have like those, I wish I had started earlier like that. But, you know, the bringing the consent up really did open a lot of doors for them to talk to me going forward about like say peers that mm-hmm. had, you know, issues with consent. And that's what it's all about, I think, is really too having that open line of conversation, open line of communication where they know that none of this is shocking to you.
Right.
You know, none of this is like something that you've never heard of or dealt with. This is just something that should be talked about.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I've done with my kids too is, you know, when I feel uncomfortable talking about something, to say like, I know this feels a little uncomfortable, but I want you to know I'll always give you an honest answer and I'll always give you the truthful answer, and trying to establish that relationship of you can come to me.
That's perfect. Yeah.
This podcast is hosted by Wellspring, a nonprofit in Saratoga County, New York, that works every day to support survivors and engage the community to end relationship and sexual abuse. If you or someone you know have additional questions or need support around relationship abuse, sexual assault, or anything discussed in this podcast, please reach out 24/7 to our hotline at 518-584-8188.